You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis.
Today, we take a deep dive into Street Roots cover article, an investigation and partnership with ProPublica's local reporting network. Portland said it was investing in homeless people's safety, and deaths skyrocketed. The city responded to an increase in homeless deaths by intensifying encampment sweeps and adding emergency shelter at the expense of permanent housing. Experts say this has perpetuated the problem. I'm joined by Street Roots Editor-in-Chief Kay Rambo. Welcome, Kay. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, first of all, I'd just like to take a moment to talk about the 8 awards that Street Roots just won with SPJ and also acknowledge this big partnership with ProPublica. And tell me a little bit about both of those things.
Yeah. So every year, Street Roots enters its work into the regional Society of Professional Journalists contest. It includes Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and Montana. And we were fortunate enough to win 6 first place awards and 2 second place awards this year.
Nice. Will you tell me a little bit about some of the articles that won?
Yeah. So, I mean, folks who read the spring anthologies in April will be familiar with these. And these were some of our bigger stories throughout last year. But I wrote some stories on prison deaths, for instance, examining the state prison healthcare system, and in particular, trying to understand why deaths were at a record high in Oregon's prisons while the population was continuing to decline. So you kind of had this increasing mortality rate. Those stories won first place in government and politics reporting, as well as healthcare reporting. Jeremiah Hayden, staff reporter at Street Roots, won several awards, including first place in poverty and homelessness reporting for his coverage of the Grants Pass versus Johnson Supreme Court case. He won second place in breaking news for the story he wrote on the actual decision in that case. He and I won first place in the series category for the series we worked on last year, looking at Portland's crime data, particularly that the narrative from officials about this kind of, you know, crime wave taking place. Really, there was no data to really support that conclusion that we were hearing from local officials. That won first place in series coverage. Kimberly Cortez, who was an intern at Street Roots last summer, wrote some amazing stories on the city's affordable housing programs and how they don't really serve, like, you know, minimum wage workers or folks who are homeless. That won first place in business reporting, which is probably the first time Street Roots has won an award for business reporting. We won, Etta O'Donnell King, our illustrator and designer, won first place for newspaper design and layout. And then Ellen Clark, one of our freelancers, won second place in sports feature for her story on Street Soccer USA, their Portland chapter. So probably another first for Street Roots, winning a sports reporting award. And I think that's all of them, but it's a long list.
Yeah, thank you. That's really exciting. Congrats.
Thank you.
It's definitely well earned. So let's move on a little bit to the ProPublica partnership. Would you just briefly tell me about how that partnership was formed?
Yeah, so we applied last year to ProPublica's local reporting network, which is kind of a really exciting national initiative. ProPublica is probably the biggest nonprofit independent news outlet in the country, and certainly one of the best resourced. So kind of in recognition of that, they have started the local reporting network a few years ago that really kind of helps direct some of their resources into local outlets. You know, I've been able to work with their editors, work with their data team, work with their fact-checking team, all of that. So it's been really exciting. We applied. We were fortunate enough to be selected, and specifically in their 50-state initiative, where they're trying to place a investigative project in every state over the next 5 years. We were lucky enough to kind of snag Oregon's spot in that initiative. And that started in October. So this story, and this being our first story, obviously, there's been a ton of time and work put into this piece, not just by me, but folks at Street Roots and ProPublica alike.
Great. So this article that you're working on in collaboration, you just published one, and this article is about how the city is investing in unhoused people's safety. And there's a kind of huge discrepancy here that you point to right off the bat, which is the city has been spending a ton of money on the unhoused population, roughly 200,000 per homeless resident during this period of time. And meanwhile, the deaths of homeless people recorded in the county have quadrupled. So can you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, Portland's homeless mortality rate has increased a lot. Like you said, just kind of the sheer numbers that have been recorded, deaths have more than quadrupled since 2019. 2022 and 23 do include a new state data source, but it accounts for right around 11% of deaths. So it's not, even if you kind of take out this additional data source, the deaths per person, you know, per thousand, have more than tripled. So Portland is having a really big problem with homeless mortality. It is in 2023, which is, you know, the most recent year that there's available data, Portland had the highest homeless mortality rate of any major city on the West Coast that had available data. So yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, it was really an effort to kind of just look into what is the city doing to address this. Could the city be doing things that maybe aren't helping or could be making a situation worse? And when you talk about this, you know, huge pot of money, a lot of that is the city's affordable housing programs, which, you know, they point to when you ask about kind of what are you doing to address homelessness. But like we just talked about a couple minutes ago, the city's affordable housing program does not really serve homeless people by and large. And that's where a pretty substantial amount of that investment has gone. And what we've seen, I guess, over the last 5 years is really a shift away from kind of evidence-based approaches to addressing homelessness, specifically housing, like permanent housing for homeless folks. There is what I found was that there is a ton of evidence that the most effective and efficient way to address homelessness is to provide housing and services to people. So for instance, on kind of this shifting approach from the city, in 2019, the city spent about $20 million specifically on programs that would provide housing for homeless people. The last fiscal year, which ends at the end of this month, the city spent about $4 million. So it's been, you know, about a 75% reduction in the amount of money that the city has spent on trying to house homeless people.
And then also, I'm just curious about the rest of the money. Like, what is the city spending all this money on?
Yeah, I mean, while we have seen the permanent housing funding decrease by, like I said, about 75%, we've seen a huge increase in sweep spending and spending for emergency shelters. Close to $250 million over the last 5 years were spent on shelter and sweeps, and that number has climbed every year. And it's really kind of part of the city's kind of shifting approach coming out of the pandemic, especially where there was a huge emphasis put on sweeps. There was kind of a deprioritizing of money that was going to the county to support permanent housing programs. You know, there's kind of these public conflicts we saw between the city and county. A lot of that was that the city wanted its money to, yes, stop going to tents and tarps and kind of survival materials, but the city also wanted its money to stop well, they wanted a lot less of their money going to these housing programs, and they wanted that money going to the new shelter programs that we've seen the city erect, again, particularly coming out of the pandemic since 2021. So kind of like the subheading on the article says, the city really prioritized sweeps and emergency shelter at the expense of permanent housing, which is kind of the, you know, again, really, if you ask the experts, if you look at the evidence, permanent housing is the most effective way to address homelessness.
Absolutely. So homeless residents here, you mentioned, are at a much higher risk of death than in other cities all across the West Coast. Can you give me some of those numbers? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's really stark. Multnomah County in 2023, for homeless residents, there was a 62 per 1,000 death rate, mortality rate. When you look at King County, which has Seattle and Tacoma, when you look at Los Angeles County, when you look at Santa Clara County, which has San Jose, Multnomah County, the homeless mortality rate here is at least double each of those cities. Each of those counties. The only county that came close to Multnomah County was San Diego. And the thing that's interesting about San Diego and Multnomah County, and this kind of takes us to the other main point in the story, is that the difference is that they sweep homeless people at a much higher rate than the other cities on the West Coast. Portland in particular sweeps more homeless encampments than any of these cities and has the smallest homeless population. So it's the highest rate of per person of sweeps. I mean, last year alone, the city swept more camps than there were unsheltered people. So just the math would indicate, you know, there's probably, granted, there is like a lot of inflow and outflow from, you know, folks enter and exit homelessness very quickly sometimes. But statistically speaking, if we're looking at the math, it's likely that a lot of people were swept more than once. And that was something I found in my reporting, just going out and talking to folks on the streets who, yeah, you know, I've been swept probably 5 times this year, that sort of thing. And that's really, that number has increased a lot. It's about tripled since the pandemic. You know, the city was, at, by its own accounting, doing around 50 sweeps a week. It's now doing about 20. And that was a high number, but it's in 2024, it swept about 20 encampments a day. So it's a really high rate of displacement that is not seen in other cities.
Yeah. How do these sweeps affect people's health and safety?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. And I have a letter in this issue kind of introducing this story and talking a little bit about the awards. But something I talk about in there is, you know, when I started at Street Roots about 4 years ago, there was not a ton of research on sweeps. There was very little academic research. And there's, of course, there's been some studies that have been conducted that have started to provide some, you know, medical and data perspective to the impact of sweeps. The researchers I interviewed who've studied sweeps were, you know, very clear, unequivocal in the fact that sweeps are dangerous, that they don't see a, you know, there is not a, that they've found from their studies any sort of positive health and safety impact from sweeps. And in fact, they increase the risk of overdose deaths, which has been a huge problem in the homeless population in Multnomah County. And it separates people from, you know, vital resources. They will often lose everything they own in a sweep. They will lose, including, you know, medication, their insurance card, their identification. They might lose access to people around them who could help them if they had some sort of emergency. You know, and there are a lot of like mental health effects that are really, you know, I think really powerful if you just kind of think about if you know, just about any day of the week, you could lose every single thing you own. You could be separated from everybody you know, and you have no recourse. You have nowhere else to go. You have, you know, very few options as far as replacing the belongings that you lost. It is a very difficult position for people to be put in. And like I said, the experts I interviewed, the service providers I interviewed, were all very, very adamant that while there is this kind of temporary aesthetic benefit to sweeps, they are ultimately very expensive and do not produce the results that officials would like them to.
Along with these researchers and experts, you also spoke to Portland Street Medicine. Can you talk a little bit more about their role in all of this?
Yeah, Portland Street Medicine is, you know, I would say a very well-respected local nonprofit. It's a group that when I interview other folks in the field of homeless services and, you know, for any story I'm working on, kind of one of my standard questions is, who else should I talk to about this? Portland Street Medicine is one of those groups that comes up just about every time. So it was founded in 2018. The name is what it, you know, I mean, it does what the name would indicate, right? They go out on the streets, and serve particular parts of the city and render healthcare to folks living on the streets. And that obviously takes many different forms, but the folks in that organization, obviously, I think are in a very unique position to be able to speak to the impacts of sweeps on people's health.
Thanks. Your article also mentions that the city said that they recognize that sweeps are dangerous and harmful, and that they're working to minimize the harm of these sweeps. What are they doing to minimize the risk of these sweeps, and what is the overall impact of that from your reporting?
Yeah, the city, like you said, did acknowledge that sweeps have the potential to be harmful or traumatic. And so they worked to minimize that. They referenced, you know, they said that the kind of guidelines they have were created in consultation with Oregon Justice Resource Center. Of course, when I reached out to Oregon Justice Resource Center, they characterized their relationship with the city very differently and said, you know, we did not consult with them or approve or in any way condone the city's policies. We sued them on behalf of our clients who, you know, our clients negotiate or chose a settlement with the city that added a few important, you know, changes to the city's sweep policies, specifically things like an additional notice before a sweep rather than just that kind of 3 to 10 day window. The city being a little more clear on what materials they're supposed to store after they sweep an encampment, and also more clarity from the city on what areas are actually included in a sweep. That's something Street Roots has reported on in the past, but there's been a lot of complaints about, you know, like posting an encampment and then sweeping 4 blocks, right? Like that's, whereas, you know, now there's a little bit more in place that would encourage the city to, you know, post each of those blocks and make sure that the folks there are aware of what's happening. But they are, you know, pretty minor, I think, kind of in the grand scheme of the city's sweep practices.
The city has turned away from long-term housing approach to more of a short-term shelter housing approach. How is this impacting the housing scene right now?
That's a great question. And I think it's something that the city, at least publicly, has yet to acknowledge or really reckon with. You know, the city told me they don't view short-term emergency shelter and permanent housing as an either or. You know, then at the same time, they did specifically ask the county to spend less of their money on housing and more of it on shelter. So that was, you know, one instance where it was objectively an either or and they chose shelter. You know, I and something we don't really talk a whole lot about in the story, but it is referenced, you know, early on, kind of giving context. The city faced a ton of pressure coming out of the pandemic, particularly from local business associations, you know, neighborhood associations of homeowners, folks who were very upset about the visible homelessness. You know, I think when we're talking about the business community, especially downtown, there was this kind of you know, moving target that they were trying to hit as far as figuring out why so many businesses were struggling to stay open, why there was such a high commercial real estate vacancy rate. You know, I nationally and even some local reporting, I remember a piece in 2020 by Everton Bailey for the Oregonian. He's no longer there, but it was an incredible piece looking at the Portland Business Alliance, then now the Portland Metro Chamber, said that, you know, businesses lost X amount of dollars due to protests. Well, when you looked at the data, most of that money was lost due to the pandemic, right? And not meeting projected sales, you know, renting, like making less money and still, you know, you have leases and things that you've already agreed to pay for, right? It was a tremendously difficult time for businesses. So I think really this kind of like initially we saw it was being blamed on the pandemic and, you know, restrictions to try to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Then that kind of is, you know, shifted over a little bit toward protests. And then it's shifted a lot toward protests. And then the protests ease, and then it's to homelessness. And it really, you know, I think because homelessness didn't go away or become a lot less, at least focused on it, over the course of a few months, like the pandemic or, you know, protests, like those things kind of had periods of time where they were really the main focus and then periods of time where they weren't. Homelessness is one of those things that has not really eased up, right? So I think in a lot of ways, the city has faced a lot of pressure to act immediately. And again, the evidence would say that like there's not an immediate solution to homelessness. There is not a way to just snap your fingers and we've solved this problem. And so the city, you know, really kind of took a turn toward these shorter term, faster things that are not solutions to homelessness. They're not, you know, there's no evidence to suggest that they reduce homeless mortality or improve public safety. But they do get people away from a particular location for a period of time. Right. And so you have really, and of course I think, you know, you look at the increase in shelter that was, I mean, really, really fast and furious kind of starting in late 2021. You know, a lot of that had to do with the fact that the city wanted to start arresting people for sleeping in public. And because Grants Pass versus Johnson had not been decided, they had to be able to offer people shelter. So then there was this huge focus on we need to build, you know, I mean, there were those initial ideas of like 500-600 person outdoor mass tent encampments and, you know, which oddly enough were, you know, we're kind of circling a little bit, but, you know, what the city has done over the last 5 years is really, really similar to what Donald Trump says we should be doing about homelessness, which I think is just an observation. I think that's a really incredible thing to be saying about the city of Portland, and, you know, a place that is regarded as being so liberal. The city's homelessness policies are much, you know, much more similar to current President Donald Trump's homelessness policies than they would be, I think, with what folks would consider progressive or liberal in some way.
Can you explain a little bit about what some of the shortfalls of short-term housing, like shelter initiatives, are?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, right? There are a lot of limitations to shelter. And I think it is important to note that there is a humanitarian value to shelter. There is, you know, certainly a safety element at depending on the situation. Like, you know, if we're talking about extreme weather events, right? We're coming out of a heat wave. You know, we've seen the city and county open emergency shelters specifically for weather. And you know, we're talking about thousands of people who all have their own lives and preferences and needs. So I just think there needs to be a caveat, I think, when we're discussing shelter. You know, it different types of shelter work really well for people. Different types of shelter don't work at all for some people. It's very, I think, kind of complex, right? However, it is it is really difficult to live in, especially the kind of traditional mass shelter, which is what most of the beds are in Portland, and to be able to go get a job or to, you know, I mean, you can't lock your stuff up. There's often really, you know, kind of narrow periods of time that folks are allowed to show up and leave the shelter, which if you already have a job or you have an interview or something, that could be a problem. You know, so there are just, I mean, there are a lot of places where you can't bring your romantic partner or your dog or your pack or, you know, like the tool, you know, if you're used to sleeping outside and in the woods, you probably have like a knife or things that, you know, might be considered a weapon in a certain context that are not going to be allowed in there. And there's some that do security checks every time people leave. You can't have your friends come over. Like, there are just so many little things that get added to these shelters, even the ones that are low barrier, that create barriers for people. And so it is just not, you know, if you can't take a shower and lock your stuff up and go to your interview or whatever, it's going to be pretty hard to pull those things off. So yeah, it's just, it's not, it is not at all, I think, the same as someone having an actual place to live that is their home. And that was something that that's not my opinion. That's what the researchers were very adamant about. And that's what, you know, all of the evidence would indicate.
You sort of just mentioned it, but through your reporting, what is something that you found that kind of feels like hope?
All the evidence points toward housing and services, you know, which I think is, you know, it's one of those things that almost seems too easy, right? It almost seems too simplistic of an answer. But I think, you know, after doing this for several years and writing this story over the last 7 months and interviewing everyone I have, it seems to me that the solutions are actually very simple. It is the systems and processes that exist that make them difficult to obtain, if that makes sense. You know, there's just a lot of red tape. There are money concerns. There's the fact that people are more likely to support, you know, someone like a middle class first time homeowner being able to buy a house than they are, you know, with government subsidy, than they are like a homeless person being able to live inside with a government subsidy. So you have kind of, you know, I think in addition to a lot of just kind of logistical challenges that the city would face, I think there's also at times a lack of political will. And then of course, the folks who need housing and don't have it are not the ones who have the ear of our city leaders. They do not have the same power and influence, of course, that the business owners who want these folks removed from public view have. It's not kind of an even push and pull. And I think that, you know, the research shows that the things that are not solutions are the things that the city has prioritized over the last 5 years, and especially over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years coming out of the pandemic.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, get out there today?
You know, I think this story is really important. I would really encourage folks to read it. It's kind of long, but there's a lot in there. And I think it's really important, especially as the city is, you know, charting a new course. There's a new city council, there's a new mayor, new versus when I started writing this story, it's June now, but, you know, there are, I think, opportunities for the city to go a different direction. But I guess the thing that is really, you know, has really stuck with me throughout this whole process is this is not at its core about policy or you know, worthiness or politics, even, you know, political affiliation. This is about human lives, right? This is about, you know, the city is doing something that studies indicate is 10 to 22% more likely to cause someone to die of an overdose if they're a drug user. They're doing things that, you know, objectively damage people's access to healthcare and services. Clearly, there are some concerns that these practices do address, but, you know, we're spending a ton of money on something that the city itself has not researched the impacts of, and the folks who have researched it are very adamant in their argument, and not argument, in their findings that this practice is harmful and does not push anyone closer to housing or stability.
Thank you so much for your time, Kay.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great talking with you.
You've been listening to KBOO News in Depth with Street Roots editor in chief.
Dr. Demento, I am here in a land of happy, freaky people. KBOO Portland.
Camp KBOO is in session. Sign up to support